Hi, Dave Emery here. This is side one of For the Record program number 789, The Assassination of Robert F. Kennedy Reopened. This program has been recorded on April 27th of the year 2014. Let me begin by reminding listeners that all of the material that I have done, quite literally my entire life's work, is available for download for free on the SpitfireList.com website. There is also a tremendous body of ancillary material, including a mini library of old anti-fascist books and articles by a contributing editor, and the comments themselves constitute the comments on the blog descriptions constitute a tremendous body of information in and of themselves. I am now in my 34th year, actually, on the air. And that's a time period stretching from roughly the stock market crash of 1929 through the assassination of John F. Kennedy in November of 1963. Because of that, necessarily, the serious understanding of much of what I have to say will be dependent on enterprising listeners who will go to the archives, both audio and written, and pursue the information that is available there. This program is a salient example of that. We are going to be talking about the assassination of Senator Robert F. Kennedy on June 5th of 1968. That killing removed Robert F. Kennedy from the 1968 presidential campaign. He had just clinched basically the Democratic nomination by winning the California primary. He was then gunned down in the pantry of the Ambassador Hotel in Los Angeles, California. The alleged assassin was one Saran Saran. As we are going to see, the holes in that case, and they are massive, have been reopened and widened by a dedicated defense team. Suffice it to say that Saran Saran, who was convicted of the killing, has been placed by witnesses as anywhere from 3 to as much as 14 feet in front of Robert F. Kennedy. Most placed him roughly 7 or 8 feet in front of the senator. Coroner Thomas Noguchi, in his report, his autopsy report, stated that the fatal shot, the shot that killed Senator Robert F. Kennedy, was fired from a distance of no more than 3 inches from the back of Senator Kennedy's head. The gunshot was so close, was fired from a distance so close to Senator Kennedy's head that the wound was macerated, the flesh around the wound was macerated from the muzzle blast. And this was a .22 caliber pistol, so it was not a very powerful muzzle blast. The point being that the fatal shot was fired from almost flush with the back of Senator Robert Kennedy's head, and Saran Saran, who was convicted of the killing, was anywhere from, some have placed him as close as 3 feet from in front of the senator, and most 7 or 8 feet, some as far away as 12 to 14 feet. There is no way that Saran Saran could have fired a fatal shot from less than 3 inches from the back of Senator Robert Kennedy's head when he was standing several feet in front of Robert Kennedy. That certainly would appear to be self-evident to someone with half a brain, but the fact of the matter is that the media did not tell the truth, and there was a very effective cover-up. That assassination changed in a fundamental way the makeup and the outcome of the 1968 presidential election. Coroner Noguchi, by the way, as we looked at in AFA program number 9 from June of 1985, testified that he had been pressured to change his results in his autopsy report about Robert Kennedy. There is a lot of other information about the Robert Kennedy assassination, time permitting. At the end of this broadcast, I'm going to take time to sum up some of that. Suffice it to say that Saran, like Lee Harvey Oswald, was a patsy. He did not and could not have done what he was accused of doing. And now, thanks to the efforts of two attorneys, Dr. William Pepper and Laurie Dusek, last name D-U-S-E-K as in kangaroo, the investigation into the assassination of Robert F. Kennedy has been reopened. We're going to begin with reading an article by Jackie Goddard, J-A-C-Q-U-I-G-O-D-D-A-R-D, from the Daily Telegraph from the United Kingdom. This is titled, Saran, Assassin of Robert F. Kennedy, Launches New Campaign for Freedom 42 Years Later. This is from December 3rd of the year 2011. It reads in part, lawyers for Robert F. Kennedy's alleged killer Saran claimed to have new evidence that will free him from prison 42 years after he was jailed for assassinating the U.S. Senator. They say the new material hands them, quote, game, set, and match, unquote, in their campaign to release him from the life sentence he was given on being convicted for gunning down the senator at a California hotel. They have launched a fresh appeal on behalf of Saran, 67, claiming in court for the first time that prosecutors fabricated ballistics evidence against him at trial, switching a bullet that was taken from the dead senator's neck for one that they claimed matched the defendant's gun. Lawyers also seek a re-examination of claims that Saran was framed by shadowy agents indirectly suggested as being the CIA, who they say, quote, hypno-programmed, unquote, him into taking part in the shooting to divert attention from their own fatal gunfire. Court documents filed in federal court in Los Angeles now pull together years of research, evidentiary documents, and psychological analyses of Saran for a case that his lawyers say proves him as a victim of, quote, an egregious miscarriage of justice, unquote, and again quoting, horrendous violations of his legal rights, unquote. Quote, on the law and on the evidence, it's game, set, and match to us. It's all over, unquote, Dr. William Pepper told the Sunday Telegraph. Again quoting, but we are dealing with a high-profile political assassination that involves the government and government agencies and a cover-up for 43 years. So I'm not confident that we are going to overcome the politics, but I am confident that they have got to give us an evidentiary hearing and put all this under oath in a court of law, which has never happened, unquote. Senator Kennedy died on June 6, 1968, one day after the shooting at the Ambassador Hotel in Los Angeles, where he had been celebrating victory in the California primary for the race for the Democratic presidential nomination. He had just delivered his victory address in the ballroom and was taking a shortcut out of the hotel through the crowded kitchen when Saran stepped forward and opened fire. The senator's loss altered the course of American politics and sent shockwaves through a country still coming to terms with the assassination 4.5 years earlier of his brother, President John F. Kennedy, by political malcontent Lee Harvey Oswald. Well, of course, as we have seen in so very many programs, Oswald did not kill anybody, not Kennedy, not Officer J.D. Tippit. He was a patsy, so was Saran. A couple of things I would note in that article, that Dr. William Pepper, one of Saran's defense attorney, stated that they had the evidence and that it was game, set, and match, but he was not at all sure that they were going to be able to overcome the politics in the situation. One of the most profound quotes that I have ever heard comes from political comedian Mort Saul, one of the people who inspired me to do the work that I'm doing. In his autobiography, Heartland, published in 1976, Mort Saul observed, quote, "How many lies can you allow yourself to believe before you belong to the lie?" And that is profound. How many journalists and editors have been earning money for decades by disseminating the official truth, which is actually a lie. The same is true of John F. Kennedy's assassination and so many other things as well. How many history professors, how many people have been earning money and generating professional gravitas for years? How many legal professionals have been generating legal gravitas for years by adhering to the official story? And how many people would not be able to make their house payments, their car payments, finance their children's college educations if, in fact, they were to depart from the official narrative? Again, how many lies can you allow yourself to believe before you belong to the lie? And then Mort Saul asked, is it too late for America? We will find out. By the way, Mort Saul was one of New Orleans District Attorney Jim Garrison's investigators in the assassination of John F. Kennedy. More about the Robert Kennedy assassination. This is from the Sideshow program on CNN. It's by Eric Pfeiffer, P-F-E-I-F-F-E-R, of April 30th of 2012. It's titled, "Key Witness in Assassination of RFK Says Saran Saran Didn't Act Alone." A key witness to the 1968 assassination of Robert F. Kennedy has retracted her official statement in the case and now claims that convicted assassin Saran Saran did not act alone. Nina Rhodes Hughes, 78, tells CNN that the FBI, quote, twisted, unquote, her original statements to authorities. In recent court filings led by California Attorney General Kamala Harris, state prosecutors argued that even if there were a second gunman on the scene, Saran is still guilty of murder. Quote, "What has to come out is that there was another shooter to my right," unquote, Ms. Rhodes told CNN. Again, quoting, "The truth has got to be told. No more cover-ups," unquote. Rhodes' original FBI statement says she only heard 8 gunshots at the time and makes no mention of a second shooter. However, Rhodes, who was just feet away from Kennedy, says she never claimed to have heard only 8 shots. Quote, "I never said 8 shots. I never said it. There were more than 8 shots," she told CNN. Again, quoting, "There were at least 12, maybe 14 shots. And I know that there were because I heard the rhythm in my head." Parenthetically, Saran's gun only held 8 bullets and he did not have time to reload. So the issue of there being 12, 13, 14 shots is fundamental. Continuing with the story, last November, Saran's attorneys announced that they were filing a challenge to the verdict, alleging a conspiracy by authorities in the case. They are asking that Saran be released from prison. His attorneys argue that Saran was the victim of a malicious form of hypnoprogramming, unquote, that falsely caused him to believe that he was RFK's assassin. "For me, it's hopeful and sad that it's only coming out now instead of before, but at least now instead of never," unquote, Ms. Rhodes told CNN. Ms. Rhodes was never called as a witness in Saran's trial, but claims she gave an interview shortly after the shooting, during which she claimed to have heard at least a dozen shots. And again, if there were more than 8 shots, then there obviously has to have been more than one gunman. And more about this particular article, talks about some acoustical evidence that has been scientifically examined. And we'll, again, time permitting, at the end of the program, I'm going to go into some of the basics concerning the evidence and the cover-up and some of the political connections and also some of the issues about mind control. This also is a CNN story. It's by Michael Martinez and Brad Johnson from March 5th of 2012. Attorneys for RFK killer Sharon push second gunman argument. And again, CNN, March 5th, 2012. If there was a second gunman in Senator Robert F. Kennedy's, beginning again, if there was a second gunman in Senator Robert F. Kennedy's assassination, who was it, unquote. Lawyers for convicted assassin Sharon Sharon claimed that their client did not fire any of the gunshots that struck the presidential candidate in 1968. And in their latest federal court filing, they also ruled out another man some may have considered a suspect, a private security guard named Thane Eugene Caesar, who was escorting Kennedy at the time that he was shot. Attorneys William Pepper and Laurie Dusek, D-U-S-E-K, insist someone other than their client, Sharon, fatally shot Kennedy. They now say the real killer was not Caesar, a part-time uniformed officer long suspected by some conspiracy theorists of playing a sinister role in the senator's murder. In their court brief filed February 22nd, Sharon's lawyers said that Caesar is, quote, believed in some quarters, though not here, to be the second gunman, unquote. It is my personal belief at this time that the security guard Caesar was not the second shooter, unquote, William Pepper said in an email to CNN. But Pepper added Caesar still might have been involved in an assassination conspiracy. He may well have played a role, unquote, he said. I have information but cannot reveal it at this time, said Pepper, who insisted that his information requires a new trial for Sharon or at minimum an evidentiary hearing. Quote, we need an evidentiary hearing to deal with the second shooter and his identity, he added. Pepper and his co-counsel also alleged fraud was committed at Sharon's 1969 trial when prosecutors allowed substitute bullets to be admitted as evidence in place of the real bullets removed from Kennedy's neck and shooting survivor Ira Goldstein's hip. Quote, there was a fraud on the court with respect to the ballistics evidence. I think this is quite clear, unquote, Pepper told CNN. The remedy is a new trial or Sharon's release. Unquote, skipping down. Sharon's lawyers say the Stanislaw Pruszynski audio tape reveals that a second gun fired at least five shots in addition to the eight shots fired by their client. Pepper and Busek based this on an analysis of the recording by audio expert Philip von Praag, V-A-N, and also capital P-R-A-A-G, who has concluded that the shots, the sounds of at least 13 shots can be counted on the tape, even though there were only eight bullets in Sharon's one and only gun, which he had no opportunity to reload. All of that means that a second gun had to be involved, according to von Praag's analysis. Pepper and Dusek say von Praag's conclusions are not speculation, but are, quote, based on solid scientific evidence, unquote, and Pepper says Harris's recent court filing has now raised public recognition of the second gunman scenario that both he and Dusek are advancing. Quote, what is of interest here is that there now seems to be more recognition of the fact that there was a second shooter, well positioned to put three bullets into the senator from close powder burn range behind him, while Sharon was always some distance in front of him, unquote, Pepper told CNN. The von Praag audio analysis concludes that the Pruszynski recording is authentic and that all 13 sounds are gunshots, not a single one of them a bursting balloon or any other non-shot noise, shot ricochet, or echo. It also finds that some of the shots were fired too rapidly, at intervals too close together for all the shots to have come from Sauron's inexpensive handgun, and that the five shots which Von Plaug says were fired opposite the direction of Sauron's eight shots, those five being the 3rd, 5th, 8th, 10th, and 12th shots in the sequence, displayed an acoustical quote, frequency anomaly, unquote, indicating that the alleged second gun's make and model were different from Sauron's weapon. So again, at this point, there is some very good acoustical slash scientific evidence that there were more than eight shots fired, and that means more than one gun. One of the things that we have spoken about in AFA program number 6 and in AFA program number 9 is the hypnoprogramming of Sauron. There is very good evidence that Sauron was hypnoprogrammed to believe that he was the assassin and to have performed in the manner that he performed in the pantry of the Ambassador Hotel. He had no recollection of having shot President Kennedy, and now there has been some hypnotic regression of Sauron. And one of the things that Sauron has maintained is that a mysterious figure called the girl in the polka dot dress was not only someone who helped to manipulate him to do what he did, but someone for whom he had a strange, passionate attraction. And many have suggested that, in fact, this was part of the mind control of Sauron, and now there is evidence that is moving in that direction. The polka dot dress girl is a woman who was heard shortly after Kennedy's assassination running out of the Ambassador Hotel saying, we got him, or we shot him, we killed Kennedy. And there was never any follow-up as to who she might have been or who perhaps we, unquote, were. We spoke about this in For the Record program 742, and we are going to recap that now. This is from Yahoo News of April 28th of 2011. It is an AP story by Linda Deutsch, and it's titled, Convicted RFK Assassin Says Girl Manipulated Him, unquote, and it reads in part, convicted assassin Sauron was manipulated by a seductive girl in a mind control plot to shoot Senator Robert F. Kennedy, and his bullets did not kill the presidential candidate, lawyers for Sauron said in new legal papers. The documents filed this week in federal court and obtained by the AP detail extensive interviews with Sauron during the past 3 years, some done while he was under hypnosis. The papers point to a mysterious girl in a polka dot dress as the controller who led Sauron to fire a gun in the pantry of the Ambassador Hotel. But the documents suggest a second person shot and killed Kennedy while using Sauron as a diversion. For the first time, Sauron said under hypnosis that on a cue from the girl, he went into, quote, range mode, unquote, believing he was at a firing range and seeing circles with targets in front of his eyes. Quote, I thought that I was at the range more than I was actually shooting at any person, let alone Bobby Kennedy, unquote. Sauron was quoted as saying during interviews with Daniel Brown, a Harvard University professor and expert in trauma memory and hypnosis. He interviewed Sauron for 60 hours with and without hypnosis, according to the legal brief. Sandy Gibbons, a spokeswoman for the Los Angeles County District Attorney, said prosecutors were unaware of the legal filing and as a result could not comment on it. The story of the girl has been a lingering theme in accounts of the events just after midnight on June 5, 1968, when Kennedy was gunned down in the hotel pantry after claiming victory in the California Democratic presidential primary. Witnesses talked of seeing such a female running from the hotel shouting, "We shot Kennedy," unquote. but she was never identified, and amid the chaos of the scene, descriptions were conflicting. Through the years, Cerón has claimed no memory of shooting Kennedy and said in the recent interviews that his presence at the hotel was an accident, not a planned destination. Under hypnosis, he remembered meeting the girl that night and being smitten with her. He said she led him to the pantry. Quote, "I am trying to figure out how to hit on her. That's all I can think about," unquote, he says in one interview cited in the documents. Again quoting, "I was fascinated with her looks. She never said much. It was very erotic. I was consumed by her. She was a seductress with an unspoken unavailability," unquote. Cerón maintained in the hypnotic interviews that the mystery girl touched him or, quote, pinched, unquote, him on the shoulder just before he fired, then spun him around to see people coming through the pantry door. Quote, "Then I was on the target range, a flashback to the shooting range. I didn't know that I had a gun," unquote, Cerón said. Under what Brown called the condition of hypnotic free recall, he said Cerón remembered seeing the flash of a second gun at the time of the assassination. Without hypnosis, he said, Cerón could not remember that shot. And again, in AFA program number 6, we went into some of the intelligence community's mind control programs, including people who have been conditioned either to commit assassinations or to behave in such a way as to make them vulnerable for being framed as patsies. We also went into the mind control angle in AFA program number 9 from June of 1985. Both of those shows are available for download for free on the SpitfireList.com website. Inside 2 of the program, we're going to go into the representation that Cerón had at his trial. He was represented by a fellow named Grant Cooper, who was actually under indictment at the time that he was representing Cerón in connection with a case that involved John Mazzelli, who was a prominent mafioso whose name has often cropped up in connection with the assassination of John F. Kennedy. And we're going to talk about some of the evidentiary tributaries that are connecting the assassination of Robert Kennedy with not only the assassination of his brother, but also with the killing of Martin Luther King and the shooting of George Wallace in May of 1972. The shooting of George Wallace eliminated him as a possible third-party candidate in the 1972 campaign. Had he run as a third-party candidate, as he did in 1968, he might have threatened Richard Nixon's so-called Southern strategy, which counted upon sweeping the racist vote in the South in order to ensure electoral success. However, we're going to talk about that inside too. Again, some of the ancillary discussion, the good background discussion that will clarify many of the things that I am talking about here are contained in various programs in the archives. There's the Guns of November series about the assassination of John F. Kennedy, the aforementioned AFA numbers 6 and 9, and any number of For the Record shows dealing with these issues, including number 582, all on the SpitfireList.com website. So please do use that website. That concludes side 1 of For the Record program number 789, the reopening of the RFK assassination. This has been recorded on April 27th of the year 2014. I'm Dave Emery. Ciao.